are experiencing this week, the signs of a church that can have deep disagreements, but beneath those disagreements is a far deeper sense of the one who unites us and for what purpose we are sent into the world.
That was Bishop Mark Hansen. He's the presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. He spoke those words in advance of a rather contentious General Assembly that was held recently in Orlando, Florida, of that largest Lutheran church body in the U.S. The issues, of course, that were on everyone's mind were the ordination of active homosexuals to the pastoral ministry and the possibility of officially blessing same-sex unions. Now, you might have read the news about this and said, sounds like they decided to do neither of those things. Maybe they turned back from the brink. We're going to talk about that General Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Dr. Roy Harrisville III is our guest. He's executive director of an ELCA reform group called Solid Rock Lutherans. He joins us for the next 25 minutes. And then we have open lines for your questions and your comments. The question I lay on the table for you, based upon this new survey, wherein it has been discovered that if you're a Christian that goes to church, the more often you go to church, the more likely you are to be in favor of the war in Iraq. Why is that? And do you think it has something to do with the fact that there's a Christian Republican in the White House? We'll talk about that in 25 minutes during open lines. Dr. Roy Harrisville III, thank you very much for being our guest and welcome.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's good to be on the program.
It's Todd, by the way.
Excuse me?
My name is Todd.
Todd, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I just talked with Jeff Schwartz.
Yes. It looks to me, and if I didn't know any better, I'd look at the headlines from the recent General Assembly, and I might say, looks like they turned back from the brink. They were headed in the direction of ordaining active homosexuals and blessing same-sex marriages, and they didn't do it.
Yes. For the first time in the 17-year history of the ELCA, an action that had been recommended by a task force, the Conference of Bishops, the ELCA headquarters, and the Church Council, was refused by the Churchwide Assembly. That has never happened before, and we are grateful that it happened in this case.
Does that mean that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America has decided not to go the path of blessing same-sex marriage or of openly ordaining active homosexuals?
I need to answer that question in two parts. In terms of the ordination of active homosexuals, the answer is no. The ELCA will not allow that practice with the action that it took at Orlando. And that is a very clear word that they sent. A thin majority, but a majority of the Churchwide Assembly voting members voted against the ordination of active homosexuals. And that's very clear. What is in contention with some is if the blessing of same-sex unions is allowed or not. Now, I want to caution your listeners that when we talk about this particular issue, we're talking about recommendation number 2 from the Church Council that was brought forward to the Churchwide Assembly. This recommendation 2 quotes a 1993 Conference of Bishops statement in which it is very clear that the bishops found no basis in scripture or tradition for the blessing of same-sex unions, and they did not approve of any such ceremonies. And that's actually quoted in the motion. In the resolved clause, it also includes a statement that the church trusts pastors and congregations to discern ways to provide faithful pastoral care to all to whom they minister. Now, some folks are trying to make it sound like this allows for the blessing of same-sex unions, or at least, does not recommend discipline for those who practice such things. I cannot read it that way. I can only read what words I see on the page and the action that the assembly took. And from what I read, I cannot justify any reading other than blessing of same-sex unions is not permitted and not allowed. And those who wish to read it differently, I believe, have a great responsibility to justify that reading.
By the way, folks, we discussed this a few days ago with Dr. James Nestigan of Luther Seminary on our national program. It was rebroadcast here on a local program as well. And in the course of that conversation, Dr. Nestigan had noted incorrectly that the 16-vote margin that had turned down the ordination of active homosexuals had been a 16-vote margin of two-thirds, whereas he drew the conclusion that the majority of the delegates there were still in favor of the ordination of active homosexuals. In fact, it was a 16-vote majority of 50%, which means less than a majority of the delegates there actually approved of the ordination of homosexuals. Just clearing up the math there. Dr. Harrisville, how, with regard to the General Assembly's action to say no to the ordination of homosexuals, how does this square with the fact that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America already has a number of open and active homosexuals serving as pastors, and some of them are quite vocal about it?
Some of them are very vocal, but they are not serving as officially ordained pastors of the ELCA. They are serving as, unofficial pastors, if you will. They technically are lay people and not ordained ministers. And we've got to be very clear about that, that though there is what's called the extraordinary candidacy process that is, of course, supported by those who wish to ordain active gays and lesbians, that is not an officially recognized branch of the ELCA, and the ELCA formally does not approve of such ordinations. So I want to be very clear about that.
Is that a means, however, by which the ordination of active homosexuals is brought in a de facto way, through the back door?
Well, of course, that is the intention, isn't it? It is the intention that by fiat and by enough pressure over the years that the church will finally acquiesce to that pressure once it sees that a number of these folks have been serving as pastors in congregations. But still, even though that has been going on, even though that has been occurring, it is still quite surprising to note what the Churchwide Assembly said in its action, that it will not allow such things to take place formally and officially.
Do you view the action of the General Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America on those two issues, do you view this as a momentary pause in an otherwise forward march toward them, or do you view this as a pause leading perhaps to a change of direction entirely? In other words, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America saying to itself, wait, we have gone too far, let us step back.
I hope and pray the latter is true, because I do think that the ELCA will become thoroughly irrelevant the more it identifies itself with the culture and society in which it finds itself. But it needs to speak a clear word of the gospel, a clear word of law and gospel on these issues. Now, what I'm hoping that will come out of this assembly is that the majority of ELCA folks, and indeed Lutherans in this country, can take heart that when the Orthodox organize, when they work hard, they can actually achieve their goals, and they can make their voice heard, and they can influence what many folks thought could not be influenced before, and that is the entire church with an Orthodox word. This is possible. We've proven that it is possible to do this, and I hope that now the reform movements within the ELCA can coalesce and take this newfound influence and voice and use it to effect real change in the ELCA leadership and in its direction, so that in the next few years, I pray that a real sea change will happen in which we will see the majority of folks in the ELCA rise up and say, this far and no farther. We must stand on God's word and on nothing else, and we will risk our lives to do so. I hope that's what happens.
Folks, we'll take your questions and your comments for Dr. Roy Harrisville III of Solid Rock Lutherans for the next 15 minutes of Issues, Etc. Our call-in numbers 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're talking about the recent General Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Harrisville, one of the things that has been noted by several, Dr. Nestegen in our recent conversations, others from parallel reform groups within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America we've talked to, is that there seems to be a gap between, in particular, the bureaucracy, the leadership, the official leadership of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and the average parish pastor, and even more so with the average parishioner in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Do you see that same theological chasm?
Unfortunately, I do. And I say unfortunately because what that means is that we have a small agenda driving a great number of people. And it's not an agenda that I believe the church wishes to adopt. And I hope that those who have been driving these agendae will now hear that they are not going in the direction that the spirit of the church wants to go. And that's why I hope and pray that the reformist groups will be able to coalesce and make sure that their voice is continually heard.
What is informing that agenda, be it the agenda of those who are very open about this? I'm thinking about the former Bishop Chilstrom, who has been associating himself since he left office there with the advocacy groups for these homosexual issues, or Mark Hansen, who currently serves as the presiding bishop, who kind of claims a neutral position, but of course it is broadly known that he has been pushing hard as well. What informs that agenda? Who is setting the goals, or what is setting the goals?
Well, let me say that I think two underlying things are happening. There are two gospels struggling with each other in the ELCA, and I think, indeed, in Protestant mainline denominations in general. And from these two gospels come two different theologies. The gospels that are struggling with each other cannot be reconciled, but I actually think the theologies can be. This is what I mean. We have the age-old gospel of transformation, in which we believe that Christ changes us, changes our hearts and our minds, alters the human being, that he kills us and makes us alive again, a total transformation of the self. That's one gospel. But this other gospel, which I believe is an alien gospel, teaches that God accepts us as we are and does not seek to change us, but simply includes us and welcomes us and leaves us as we are. Now, from these two Gospels come two theologies. One is the theology that says Jesus Christ liberates us from sin, death, and the devil. This, of course, is the transformative Gospel theology. But the other theology says that Jesus liberates us from oppressive institutions like racism, capitalism, sexism, what have you. Now, I think those two theologies can be reconciled if we understand that the one flows from the other, and that the theology of liberation from sin, death, and the devil is primary and must always be primary. Those two can be reconciled in time, but the two gospels can't be. Now, when we're talking about the leadership and when we're talking about the folks in the pew, when we're talking about pastors, what needs to happen in the ELCA is a return to the primary gospel of transformation and the primary theology that I have mentioned. Unfortunately, what's happened is, for the sake of relevance, influence, what have you, seeming to be with it, the alien theology and the alien gospel have been accepted as a kind of a means to reach people or to seem as though the ELCA were not a bunch of fundamentalists, as it were. And I hope that our pastors and our leadership will soon realize that if they really want to be truly relevant, they've got to be oriented toward the primary and transformational gospel.
I know that the term fundamentalist is one that is often used to describe those who would simply hold to the authority of Scripture, a right understanding of law and gospel, that transformative gospel, as you put it, and simply take, in spite of the culture's pressure, what God's Word has to say at its face value on these issues. But I got to wonder, you know, if it seems as though if the ELCA is running, or at least the leadership, is running away from the fundamentalist label, that is a path, at least as evidenced by other major church bodies who are doing the same, where there's no real stopping.
No, there isn't. And what's more, I don't know any fundamentalists. I don't know where they live, and I don't know where they go to church. Perhaps we see a few on TV now and then, but for the most part, the quote-unquote evangelical wing of American Protestantism abandoned fundamentalism years ago. Where are these folks? I don't know. And nowadays, fundamentalist is simply a term of derision used by anybody to give a bad name to their opponents. I mean, we even see in the media Muslim fundamentalists. Well, that's of course a non sequitur. It's an oxymoron. You can't have that kind of thing. So the term fundamentalist is simply a bad name now. But what I think is happening among some folks is they are trying to run away from that image so fast that they will stumble and fall and break their necks and anybody else who follows them. I don't think they need to do that. I think, especially for Lutherans, our job is to make sure that we do not align ourselves with either the right or the left, because actually both of them, I think, are legalists in the end, and that's what we have to be afraid of, and that's what we have to guard against, not fundamentalism per se.
How is it that the left is legalist?
Oh, the left is quite legalist in insisting that its particular take on society and the ills of society is the only take that one can have, and that if you do not share that view, that you do not follow Jesus. Well, it's the same kind of thing for the folks on the right who say the same thing, only they have a different view of things. Legalism is that theology that says you must do things the way I understand them and you cannot do them any other way, otherwise I will not allow you to be, you know, a Christian. Well, Lutherans have never said that. Lutherans have always tried to kind of drive a wedge between those two positions and insist that when we start making our faith into rules and regulations, whether it be on the right or the left, we're in trouble, always in trouble. But it's only when we concentrate on both the law and the gospel simultaneously, and the fact that we are saints and sinners simultaneously. And this, of course, tells you where we actually stand as Lutherans. I think we stand in a place that is very healthy, and we need to maintain that position. If we don't, we're sunk.
Is that really, in the end, finally here, Dr. Harrisville, is that really, in the end, what is being abandoned if the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is not pausing to turn around, but simply pausing on its way to the ordination of homosexuals and the blessing of same-sex unions, what is really being abandoned is God's word of law and gospel?
Well, that's my great fear. Of course, that's my great fear, because when one accepts gay theology, let us call it, one must accept that gospel of affirmation that I mentioned earlier. And in so doing, one must reject a theology of transformation, a theology of death and life. And to do that, one must therefore reject Christ's crucifixion and resurrection. And this is why I cannot, in good conscience, go that route, because if I do, it would mean I'd have to give up my Jesus, and I'm simply not willing to do that.
The website address for Solid Rock Lutherans, this reformed group within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, SLDRCK.org. Just take the word Solid Rock, take out all the vowels, SLDRCK.org. It's the website for Solid Rock Lutherans. Dr. Roy Harrisville III is executive director of this reformed group within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd, for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
You know, the world presents this alternate gospel, this false gospel, and it says to the church, look, this is the kind of gospel we want to hear, and this is the kind of gospel that we will award you for, that we will commend you for preaching, the gospel of affirmation, where, as I call it, a gospel without sin. Of course, the gospel without sin does not require a God who is gracious and merciful, but merely good. Does not require a God who saves, but a God who merely soothes our discomfort, but pats us on the head and says, I accept you just the way you are. The gospel without sin does not require Jesus to be our substitute at the cross and pay the price for our sins. It simply requires that Jesus be a nice guy. But that Jesus cannot save, and that gospel does not save. And that is the real danger here. Beyond the moral issues, as dangerous as they are, the real danger is the gospel you end up with, a false gospel, when you go this path. Well, what's the gospel being taught at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana? What is the gospel that is being taught to men who are preparing for the pastoral ministry in a world where the culture will not hear the true gospel, but has all sorts of alternatives to offer? It is the gospel of Christ and Him crucified for sinners. Christ, the only way, the only truth, the only life. There at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, pastors are prepared to preach that gospel, the true gospel. For more information, you can contact them at 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155, or you can find out more about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, by visiting our website. Look on the homepage for their logo, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. When we come back from this break, an interesting survey that at first seems to be a no-brainer. People who go to church, largely evangelical Christians, tend to support the war in Iraq more than the general population. And you say, well, of course, they're right-minded and right-thinking people. I want to press beyond that. We'll hear the conclusions of this survey that says the more you go to church, the more likely you are to support the war in Iraq. And I want to ask why. And if we did not have a Christian Republican in the White House, would Christians still support the war? We'll be right back.
Message first. Mission second. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In the postmodern marketplace of ideas, Christians today must constantly distinguish between the God of Christianity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and the generic God of American civil religion. Is this confrontation between Christianity and civil religion a new problem for Christians? How did American civil religion change in the last 50 years to become less like Christianity and more like Buddhism? Find answers to these questions and more in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, The Anonymous God, The Church Confronts Civil Religion and American Society. This book is edited by two Issues Etc. regular guests, Dr. David Adams and Dr. Ken Sherb. For more information about The Anonymous God, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040.
Evolution. It's an information problem.
Answers with Ken Ham, a speaker at the popular Answers in Genesis conferences.
Well, Ken, I understand that computers show that there's a problem with the topic of information and evolution. Explain this for us.
A living organism is very much like a computer. It's made up of both hardware and software, if you like. The computer's hardware is the physical parts that you can touch and feel, like the screws, cabinet, and wires. Our hardware is the physical body that we can touch and feel. The computer's software is the information that's programmed and loaded into the computer, instructing it how to function. Now, without the program, of course, the hardware will just sit there. Our software is the genetic code contained in each of our cells. Without this information, the body just ceases to function. Do you think that if you placed all of the parts necessary to build a computer and left it long enough that eventually you could return and find a fully functioning computer? Of course not. Everyone recognizes it takes intelligence to design and build a computer, yet humans are still considered by some people to be the products of chance. Why then do many people reject the Creator God and still insist that human beings are the result of random processes? Well, the answer's in Genesis. They're in rebellion against their Creator.
The Bible predicts in the book of 2 Peter that in the last days people will reject there ever was a worldwide flood. Discover more when you read Ken's free booklet at AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. In 374 BC, the Greek philosopher Plato wrote, quote, "Shall we just carelessly allow our children to hear tales which may be devised by casual persons and to receive into their minds ideas which are the very opposite of those we wish them to have?" End quote. Plato knew that stories are value-laden and influential. Our children are especially impressed and influenced by the stories they see in the media. What kind of stories are your children watching? What values do they see exemplified in their sitcoms, docudramas, and talk shows? Stories are influential, and there are no better stories for your children to know than those from the Bible, which tell of Jesus and His love. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute at cmli.org.
Do you want more of God's grace? Village Lutheran Church in Ladue is a Bible-believing church faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community that cares with a vibrant, historic Christian liturgy. Village Lutheran Church is located at 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue, www.villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, 314-993-1834. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll be talking about the Newsweek magazine cover story, Spirituality in America. How much of a story is that? What is spirituality? We'll talk to the author and to Ken Samples of the Augustine Fellowship Study Center about spirituality in America, the Newsweek article, tomorrow on Issues Etc. Here in the last hour, not the last hour, the last 25 minutes, open lines for your questions and your comments. You may have seen this, you may not have. There's a new poll by Public Agenda that is drawing a link between church attendance, religious devotion in that sense, and one's support for the war in Iraq. Now, let me, before I go into the audio cuts, I want you to react to a little bit of my own story on this, because I have been a supporter of this war. There was a time when I was a supporter of this war for a very personal reason. And that was because my youngest brother was there. He was there for the full 365 days. And I could not, maybe I'm a simple-minded buffoon, but I could not imagine not supporting a war in which my own flesh and blood was involved in. Now, did I have questions about the wisdom of the war? Of course, but in terms of just general support, I was in support of the war. I thought the initial arguments made for the war were as good as they get. Are they perfect arguments? No, but they were as good as they get. Okay. Did they turn out to be the best arguments? In other words, was the truth of, say, weapons of mass destruction borne out? Well, not as far as we know. But there was a long time when I really hoped we would find weapons of mass destruction because I didn't want that argument to be wrong. As time has gone by, brother came home from Iraq safe and sound. My mind has not changed on the war, but I think all of us would admit that whatever initial enthusiasm we may have had about it, as war drags on, and this one drags on like all do, as war drags on, you start to see a few more problems. I don't think my support has flagged, but I have been given moments in the last year or so to really question not the day-to-day strategy of what's going on, but whether it was smart to do it and whether we ought to be fighting in Iraq. We've got an Iraqi constitution, the draft, that has been submitted yesterday. And even with the minor improvements that were made in this draft of the Iraqi constitution, it is far from clear whether or not, after devoting several years to our effort in Iraq, noble as it was, we will end up with a country that still enjoys religious freedom, whether or not Sharia law will be the or a determiner of how the legislation in that country goes, who will be the final arbiter of laws. Will it be an impartial system of judges, or will it be Islamic clerics? So how much better things will be in terms of religious freedom in Iraq is a big question mark. All right. With all that said, I've had some serious time to reflect upon my personal support for the war. Suffice it to say, I still support the war effort for a number of reasons that I'm not going to go into. But I was very interested to see when this survey came out saying that those who attend church worship services on a regular basis are more likely to support the war in Iraq. More likely to support U.S. foreign policy in general and also the war in Iraq. So let's hear from Michael Romali from Public Agenda on this survey.
We found that Americans are split on foreign policy along religious lines as well as political lines. People who regularly attend religious services were much more positive about the U.S. approach than people who were non-regular attenders.
Now, at first you might say coincidence, but I wonder. Now, I'm a regular attender of church, and I had to ask when I came across this bit of information, am I supporting the war? Is there a link, a causal link between regular attendance at religious services and support for U.S. foreign policy and the war in Iraq in particular? I had to ask that question myself, and I started to wonder, is there a real link or is this mere coincidence? Now, Romali also talked about the relationship between frequent worship and the support not only for foreign policy in general, but the war in Iraq.
People who regularly attend religious services are confident about the success of U.S. policies in Iraq. They express low levels of worry about casualties or costs. They're much more optimistic about Washington's commitment to helping other nations democratize.
Now, at this point, I started to wonder, what's going on here? Why is it that people who attend religious services on a regular basis, on a frequent basis, tend to worry less about casualties, be more optimistic about where the war is going, and generally supportive of the war effort in Iraq? And this question occurred to me. This is a question I have for you. Open lines for the next 20 minutes of issues, etc. Would I feel differently about this war? I just ask myself this question. Would I be as supportive and generally supportive of this war and of our how it fits into our foreign policy were this not George W. Bush's war, so to speak, but going back a couple of years, were this President Bill Clinton's war? If it weren't a Republican in the White House, I'm a Republican, would I be supporting this war? All other things being equal, and I know you're going to say, well, all other things wouldn't be equal, but let's just say for the sake of argument, if all other things were equal, or if this were a President Al Gore, would I be supporting this war? Is this more reflective of the general support that this president has by people who frequently attend worship services? Or are they really thinking it through and saying, I support the war? Is this a survey about support for George W. Bush, or is this a survey about support for really for the war? Now, I've asked myself that question. I want you to ask yourself the question as well and give me a call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. honestly speaking, look in the mirror. Honestly speaking, how much is your support for the U.S. foreign policy and your support for the Iraqi effort really just support for George W. Bush as a Christian president, as a Republican, whatever you want to call him? And how much of it is, you know, I've really thought through the war, I've really thought through why we went, I've really thought through what we're doing, and I support it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Steve's up first. He calls from his car. Hi, Steve.
Hi. A couple of thoughts as you were playing those tapes. First of all, I think Christians who voted for Bush are too easily to give him a pass on this. Because the way I was talking to a friend who who's a Lutheran, but he's also...
Steve went out. We didn't get to hear about his friend. His observation, however, before he was cut off, Christians are willing to give George W. Bush a pass. I got to be honest with you, folks. I think that's true. My general observation. I think when there's a Democrat in the White House, Democrats tend to give him a pass where they wouldn't give a Republican. And when there's a Republican in the White House, Republicans, and many of them are also professing Christians, as are many Democrats, give that president a pass. So that, as a general observation, I think it could hardly be denied. The question is there a real relationship between church attendance and support for U.S. foreign policy and Iraq in particular? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Steve is back calling from his car. Steve, welcome back. Steve? All right, we lost him one more time. He's going to have to find a better location. All right, so we've heard from Michael Romali. He's outlined what the facts are. Here's one more cut from Michael Romali of Public Agenda.
You know, it's not surprising that people who are in that community who see the world as good and evil are more willing to say, yes, we support at any cost this battle against evil.
Now, I think that's a conclusion being drawn by Michael Romali rather than something based on any kind of hard data. Now, if he can draw a corollary between people's beliefs about good and evil and their conclusions about the good and evil that we're fighting here, but I think he's just drawing a conclusion. If you see the world in terms of good and evil, then it's probably not a problem for you if you think terrorism, Saddam Hussein, the former Iraqi regime, represents evil. Well, then we're going to fight it, aren't we? What do you think? Do you think if you're a supporter of the war, regular church attender, the kind of people that this survey is talking about, do you think that you would support the war if it were a different president? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's see what Faith has to say. She calls from her car. Faith, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I have a son who was over in Iraq for a year. He was over in Baghdad. But I think that all of this goes way back to 9/11, because for all of us who walked through with President Bush on 9/11, we formed a type of bond through that situation. And it wasn't like, well, because he's a Republican or because he's a Christian, because we voted on him and he became president and he walked through that situation with us. I think that because of his results, you know, the things that he did because of 9/11, we walked through, we supported him, we went through that with him, and that just because now things have gone a long time, we've forgotten a little bit more about 9/11, time has passed, and people are going, now wait a minute, you know, why should we do this now? But if we remember back to 9/11 and what happened to the United States at that point, I think all of this makes sense.
Well, Faith, before I let you go here, real quick question.
Yes.
So do you think if our current president was Bill Clinton or Al Gore, do you think you would still support the war in Iraq if it had been Al Gore who went down to ground to ground zero?
I understand that, and I would have a difficult time saying yes. But it would depend on how things were handled at 9/11, because that's where all of this started.
Well, so if Al Gore had been down there, said the same things, done the same things, and then proposed the same reaction in Afghanistan and then later in Iraq, would you support the war?
Yeah, and that's a rough one, too, because I normally would not. And I'm just thinking that not so much that if he had done the same things, but if we had the confidence in him as president and walked through him and supported him each step of the way, we would have to say yes.
Faith, thank you very much for the call. An honest caller. I mean, that's the question I'm asking. I didn't say it would be an easy question. If it had been Al Gore standing there at Ground Zero, and then making the speeches, and then calling the country together, and then calling the country to arms, and then going exactly the same path as President George W. Bush has all the way to this present day, would you support the war? See, I'm suspicious. I don't think it's church attendance that makes the difference in support for the war. I don't. I think it's that church attenders tend to support this president more. All right, let's talk with George, who calls from his car. Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi, George.
How are you?
Very well.
I guess my point here is that I would raise another question. If this was not an Islamic country, say the country we were fighting in is the same religion, being Christianity, say Northern Ireland or such, would the people support the war?
Oh, that's a brilliant, brilliant question. Now, I don't know if the rest of you completely understood what George was saying, but if we were not engaged in a war, generally speaking, in Islamic territory with Islamic foes, would Christian support for this war be as strong? That's a very interesting question. Let's talk to Anita. Anita's calling from her car. Hi.
Hi. Just a couple things to say before I get onto the highway. I am a Christian. I am a regular church attender. I do not support President Bush, I do not support the war. Just because he is a Christian doesn't mean that every decision that he makes is correct. And what I would say in response to the lady that spoke so eloquently about 9/11, if we were fighting as a response to 9/11, our efforts would be aimed towards Afghanistan and not Iraq. That's my opinion.
All right, Anita, thank you. Well, I don't know. I just don't know enough about the situation to make a connection between the two. So her response is duly noted. Let's see. Roy calls from his car. Roy, welcome.
Good afternoon, Pastor. You know, I think one thing we all tend to forget is why we went to Iraq in the first place. And the real reason we went to Iraq in the first place was because of the United Nations violations Iraq was under and the sanctions therein proposed against them. If it hadn't have been for this president, no action would have been taken. The second question is, are we Republicans because we're Christian, or are we Christian because we're Republicans? I think if you looked at the way the two parties are branded, I heard it on NPR this morning, The liberals and or the Democrats have been branded as gutless and godless. So it would be, you know, probably logical to follow that a church-going Christian would support an administration that was God-fearing and had a foreign policy that was a little more hawkish, if you will.
Roy, do you think if it were a President Al Gore who had walked the same path through 9/11, proposed the same response in Afghanistan and now in Iraq, that you would support the war?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I supported the Vietnam War when Johnson was president. I had a brother also in the first Persian Gulf, and he was killed. And I support it because I think that if we're going to draw a line in the sand, it has to be drawn somewhere. You know, I guess I might have liked to have seen it in Somalia and some of the other places before, but this is where we have to take our stand, I believe.
All right, Roy, thank you very much. Mike's calling from his car. Mike, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Pastor. The car is just on. His comments are absolutely right on. I hope people really heard what he said about why we were originally over there in the first place, and also the fact that the people that were fighting over there, The people that often used to live in Afghanistan, and now they're hiding out. The Taliban is often now hiding out. They've proven that it's on the news, and if people aren't paying attention to that, we are fighting the terrorists that are in Iraq. And
but,
to answer your...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to answer your question. If Al Gore would have followed the exact same steps, and I'm going with your scenario, I would certainly support him and his efforts in the war. I think... And like the lady that was on two or three calls ago that supported Bush but probably wouldn't support Gore, I think a lot of people that have that attitude probably can't put themselves in the scenario that you're suggesting. They can't actually answer a question because they know Gore wouldn't think the way Bush does. And I think that's why people would have a hard time answering that question, because if Gore acted exactly the same way Bush would, he'd have to have the same set of values, the same set of ideologies, and we just all know he doesn't do that. So,
all right, Mike, I don't know. I really don't know what a President Gore would have done. I don't think any of us can say we know what he would have done, unless we have some sort of mystical power of seeing into alternate realities. We could take an educated guess. The question is not whether Al Gore would do it. The question is if he did. And the question is, how much is this support of churchgoers for President Bush, come what may, win or lose? And how much of it is people actually thinking through the foreign policy and the foreign policy that leads to and continues throughout the Iraqi war? I'm asking you to be honest. Are you supporting this because you say, hey, look, I trust this president. I'll let him make my foreign policy decisions for me. I have a general and abiding trust in this man, and that's why I support the war? Or are you saying, I've actually thought it completely through, and I support this war as a churchgoer, according to this survey? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Don, welcome to Issues Etc.
Pastor Wilkins.
Yes.
I am a regular church attender. I attend a Lutheran church. I support this president in this war, primarily because, yes, I do ideologically agree with him, but also because I feel like my Lord compels me to, as a submission to authority as an elected official.
So whether it were President George W. Bush or President Al Gore, that same impetus for submission would be at work in you?
Yes, I feel confident that it would be. I prayed for President Clinton, and I continue to pray for President Bush.
All right, Don. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I just think it's too simplistic to say, well, look at this. These people go to church. They're obviously right-minded people, and right-minded people support the war. And that's just the way it is. That jumps over any real critical analysis of what we're doing there. You know, if you really think it's something worth supporting, you won't be afraid to actually look it square in the face and say, what are we doing there? What's happened? Have we made the right decision? Should we still be there? Blah, blah, blah. All of those kind of things. If you really think it's something I'm just asking you to be honest. Are you just leapfrogging all of that and saying, look, I just trust George W. Bush. And I happen to go to church, too. And he shares my values. So I'm not going to ask any specifics about the war, but I will support it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Steve calling from his car. Hi, Steve.
Well, hopefully this time I won't get dropped. Lovely cell phone service we pay for, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, a couple of my thoughts. Back to the original question about why, more about the why of the survey. And one of my thoughts was the fact that the church has become, over time, the American church has become militaristic in its nature. And what I mean by that is there are many Christians in the military. And I'm sure with the church you go to and the Lutheran church I go to, you know, we know a lot of people who are over there or in combat. And I think what's happened is it's a combination of knowing of lots of Christians in the military, but also kind of tying into your book of the month, the movement towards a public nature of how we view God and the United States in that. And I think there's some coalescing of those movements.
Steve, I'm glad you called back after the third try to get through, because that was a great insight. I've wondered the same thing. How much have Christians' enthusiasm for American civil religion, how much of it is based upon who's sitting in the White House or who's dealing the cards? How much is patriotic fervor based upon that as well? Or, as we're talking about now, support for the war? Lois, calling from St. Louis, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My thought on this is that I believe that I'm supporting the war, of course, because I think that every person who is ever born into this world has a right to be free and not live under a cruel dictator and be oppressed by a wicked regime. And I think that those people deserve that over there. Another reason I support it is because I believe that where there is freedom, first of all, the most important thing in the whole world is God's plan of salvation to save the world. That's God's number one objective. And where there is freedom, we have a whole lot better chance of getting in there with the gospel than we do with a dictatorship.
Lois, thank you. Can't argue with that. We always pray that there would be free course for the gospel to be preached. And we always ask God that, well, wouldn't you pray? We want free course for the gospel, and yes, if it means war, then it may even mean war. And when we see people who are suffering under the kind of cruelty, daily, unrelenting cruelty and oppression that prevailed in Iraq, that for me really is the one, my head hits the pillow every night, that's the one that basically convinces me again that, you know, it may not be all right, but in the end, God willing, we do the right thing there and give these people the kind of freedom that they ought to have. Whether it's peace or war, the Christian's concern, as Lois said, is first and foremost that the cross might be preached and that we might extend Christ's love for all men, not only through the preaching of the forgiveness of sins in his cross, but also through basic human care and relief. LCMS World Relief underwrites issues, etc. And you can find out more about them. Their headquarters here in St. Louis, 314-996-1683. 314-996-1683. Or when you get home tonight and you go to our webpage, issuesetc.org, go to their logo right there on the homepage, give it a click, and find out more about what they're doing elsewhere in the world, all around the world, connecting real care and concern with the cross of Jesus Christ. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll be talking about the Newsweek magazine cover story about spirituality in America. We'll talk with the author of that article and Ken Samples of the Augustine Fellowship Study Center. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.